Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome, everyone, to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you all back again this week. And joining me, as always, are my two great hosts, David Johnston and Kate Bakos. Kate, how are you? What's happening in your world?
Well, it's still super busy. We're getting closer to Christmas time, which feels good. We're all a little bit tired, you know, agents and buyers agents alike, because it's been such a long road. And we worked through last Christmas because we were just happy to have jobs and be back into it. I think the mood is very different this year. Everyone wants to make sure they take a break and refresh. Yep. But right now we've still got a lot of emerging volume because Melbourne pushed back all of their typical spring sales anyway because of lockdown. And then we sort of reopened with one-on-ones, which was really hectic. Agents were juggling an exploding list of new listings, and then they're now having to manage these one-on-ones with buyers. And so from an administrative and a time point of view, it was very taxing. And we saw a lot of agents who were willing to do deals prior, happy to keep things moving quickly, happy to have short campaigns in an effort to be able to facilitate servicing all of their vendors that wanted to sell in 2021, quite frankly. And the reality is an agent will sell a property prior to auction when the price is good. And even though we had a really hefty amount of stock to wade through, and we still are, the number of buyers has just been huge. So the agents have been able to facilitate really good battles and pre-auction, maybe Zoom type auctions, competitive negotiating and bidding. And they've been able to get what I would consider very strong prices, even with really, really tiny campaigns. And I'm seeing some campaigns that only last days, and that's become the new norm. And what I have noticed is the number of good off-market properties has really diminished, because a vendor that really needs to sell quickly used to turn to off-market, and now they can turn to a normal campaign because short campaigns that are well advertised have become the new norm. So that's what I'm saying, Pete.
Certainly, I've seen that property selling much quicker. So, Kate, we're recording this podcast first half of November. When can we start to see the supply of new stock coming onto the market to slow down because we're getting too close to Christmas? Is that the end of this month? Is that early December? When
typically,
do you reckon that might be?
Typically, we used to see the last of the new campaign starts in the first week of December, and that would give the vendor a three-week campaign. They'd sell the week before Christmas, sometimes a midweek auction. Now, though, knowing that we can have a two-week campaign and it sort of is the new norm, I think the second week of December is when we can ring the bell and say, right, that's it. We might get a peppering of new listings that are, you know, random, very motivated listings now, but the hardcore campaigns on the late spring schedule have now stopped, and the next wave of new campaigns will be in late January for an early Feb start.
Right. Okay, very good. Thank you very much for that, Kate. Dave,
pleasure.
How are things going in your world? What's happening?
Yeah, we're pretty consistent. Businesses booming, and yeah, we're running through to Christmas. It feels like the general feeling, though, is compared to the same time last year, is people aren't as burnt out and frazzled. I think that second lockdown last year was really tough, whereas the lockdowns this year, I think people have got to terms with a lifestyle within the lockdown and probably more comfortable with movement. And then with people looking forward to Christmas, people are certainly very conscious to take the time off and chill out and relax. It probably won't feel like the market's running over the whole Christmas period and January as much as it did last year. But yeah, look, the market's still strong. People are really needing to move quickly, put the best foot forward to be successful, and maybe even put their best 2 feet forward. So on the personal front, it's, you know, back to just ferrying kids everywhere and sport 5 or 6 days a week. So amongst the kids.
Back to the norm. back to the norm.
Birthday party invitations just coming out two a day.
Special.
So I think it's going to be a very busy period leading up to Christmas, not just for property, but you know, I know the South Australian borders are opening on the 23rd of November. Queensland borders opening up in December. So there's going to be a huge amount of people crossing borders, wanting to spend Christmas and the new year with friends, family, or just going away on holidays because they haven't had a chance to leave their own state. So it's certainly going to be a very busy period, in particular in some of our lifestyle locations. Yeah, I can imagine bookings would be through the roof, and you might even see some increased, you know, real estate activity in those areas where people fall in love with their holiday location. They've got plenty of money saved up from lockdowns and not going overseas. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens over the Christmas New Year period this year.
What's your market update, mate?
All right, so mine's about retail property, so something a bit different. So the Jones Lang LaSalle third quarter retail market commentary came out and it showed for Adelaide. So I'm just talking about Adelaide here, but people can go and look at it themselves to see what's happening in their capital city. Adelaide CBD retail vacancy rate is the highest it's been since 1993. So it's 16.8%. So the report, it's not that long if you want to have a read of it, Joan Lang LaSalle or JLL third quarter retail market commentary. But interestingly, regional retail space only has a 3% vacancy rate. Now, regional doesn't mean country. I'll explain what that means very shortly. Sub-regional, 5.5%, and neighbourhood shopping centres are 5%. So a regional shopping centre is one that has at least one department store. Like it's got at least a David Jones or a Meijer, probably your Westfields, right? Sub-regional has at least one discount department store. Like it's got a Cheapest Chips as its major anchor tenant. And neighbourhood shopping centres, they're the ones that we know that are in our neighbourhood, generally have one supermarket, at least one supermarket, as the major anchor tenant. So if you want to know what sort of impact COVID in particular has had on shopping centres, check out that report and you might think twice about investing in retail property, especially in the CBD.
Frank Lowy got out at the right time a few years ago.
He must have seen the writing on the wall.
He knew COVID was coming, maybe. No, that's very interesting. Well, look, mine's going to be a little bit lengthy, but I just feel like inflation is the talk of the town at the moment. And increasing inflation, which should lead to increasing wages, but what most people jump to is increasing interest rates, which makes people nervous. So I just thought we should touch on some of the facts with our listeners and maybe we'll dedicate a whole episode to it at some point. So underlying inflation in Australia has jumped to a six-year high of 2.1% in the September quarter. That's still well below the 4.6% recorded in the US. Just for perspective, it's still at the lower end of what the RBA targets, which is the 2-3% inflation. So what's causing the jump in inflation? Well, the oil price has soared, causing petrol prices to jump by 24% over the last year. Oil is a key input in an estimated 7,000 products across the economy, including fertilizers, which are vital to food supply. There's also been a massive shift from consumption of services to goods during the pandemic. This is likely to transition back to services as the world once again moves back to being more mobile and able to travel, you know, across state borders and around the world. So that could slow down inflationary pressures. There's also been an ongoing shortage of semiconductors, and that's stoked inflation prices, particularly the most notable for new and used cars and trucks. So the index for used cars and trucks has gone up by 26.4% over the year in the US. The time between when an order is placed and when the equipment reaches the factory floor for semiconductors has extended to 12 months, and the average delay is around 6 months. But notably, as a potential sign that things might be getting better, the growth of used car prices in Australia slowed for the first time since April 2020. So the other big one that people are aware of and obviously relevant to our podcast is construction costs. So the cost of building and renovating a home has increased by 3.8% just in the last quarter. which is more than four times the increase in the consumer price index or inflation. It's the sharpest spike since the year 2000. Over the year, the costs have jumped by 7.1% in total, which is the biggest jump in 16 years. And so then this is causing a flow-on effect. The shortage of materials and material costs is causing a flow-on effect to an increase in labour costs. So the Housing Industry Association Chief Economist Tim Reardon believes it's the most acute labour shortage on record and has pushed up labour costs by 5.2% in the year ended to September. And before the recent lockdowns, job vacancies in construction are up 80%. So material timber prices are up 12.2% to the year in September. The price of steel products climbed 23.7% and other materials such as carpet lifted by 3.9%. So obviously builders need to absorb these costs. There's also a view that we might be in for a structural longer term change because the shift away from fossil fuels will actually cause a cost increase to energy over the coming decade. Obviously, we need to, it's hard to see any other way to sort out the urgency of the climate crisis, but that is potentially a concern. Now, bringing it back to interest rates, in the short, our ever calm and considered RBA governor, Phil Lowe, came out yesterday and said that inflationary pressures are muted in Australia. He said we've been in a decades-long decline in wages growth and the likelihood of that being reversed in 6 months was very low. They are looking for wages growth consistently between 3 and 4% over at least two quarters before they would even consider lifting interest rates. That means we're probably at least 6 to 9 months away at the earliest of interest rates going up in Australia. He also believes it's just transitory, what we're going through. So, yeah, that's just a high-level, quick little education course on what's happening with inflation. I think, you know, there's so many random articles and lots of different commentary out there, so I just wanted to provide a reasonably simple breakdown for our listeners because, you know, interest rates are a concern for people and inflation is, as I said at the start, the talk of the town at the moment.
My market update is actually in relation to some really great reviews that we've recently had, and great because they're detailed. So thank you to our listeners who have given us a review and a lot of information to take on board. And two of our most recent comments had some really good, healthy criticism for us to consider, and I think that's great because we've been able to model out an extra episode on bias, human bias, and the things that humans can be biased about when it comes to investing. And our most recent from Rhubarb Rhino, thank you, is looking at past performance bias. So the theory that the last 20 years will indicate what we can anticipate for the following 20 years. And there's a lot that we need to consider. You can't just look at past behaviour and forecast future behaviour of any market. So thank you. We do want to shine a spotlight on that. And the other one was in relation to Pete asking me a little while ago what I thought about the Melbourne market and whether it was a good time to invest. And I said yes. And truth is, if you had invested in a house in Melbourne 6 months ago, you probably should have done okay. But our listener was pointing out that I run a business and I've got investments myself and I carry bias, and indeed that's very true. So thank you for bringing that up and giving us a great topic to canvas, and we are really keen to make sure we keep it real and we keep it authentic and we're really honest about things like that that can cloud people's judgment when they are giving their opinion on something that they've got an interest in. So stay tuned.
Absolutely. We really appreciate that constructive feedback, and we certainly aim to bring to the table each and every episode an unbiased perspective. So thank you. They both gave us 5 stars and they also gave us ways to get better, which is great.
But if I had a question about the Melbourne market, Kate, I'd be asking you again.
Thanks, Pete.
You have to ask somebody that understands real estate, that's in Melbourne and that is on the ground every day, to get a real perspective. Because as you were saying, Dave, there are, for example, on interest rates or inflation, there are so many articles out there, many written by people overseas, don't understand the Australian economy or the Australian property market or construction industry. We certainly have to be aware of bias, but in my opinion, You're far better off asking a person on the ground what is really happening to get a very good perspective of what is actually happening.
Well, next time you ask me, Pete, would you invest in the Melbourne market? I'll be really clear to talk about some of the things that I'm fearful about or that I think people should really run to ground before they jump in and make a purchasing decision.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. And so there are so many elements.
The market, Kate?
What do I think of the market? Well, so I'm really excited about next week's episode because we're covering off contrarian investing, and I will be sharing my own thoughts and feelings and actions, some of the things that I'm taking action on in relation to contrarian investing. So I hope that it's valuable to our listeners.
When we think we might have a bias, it's always important to think of the flip side perspective and try and ensure we're conscious of that. And yeah, we certainly aim to do that. But, you know, everyone has biases, and, you know, I don't think anyone can 100% manage their biases. We don't understand the workings of the human brain well enough to be able to control that yet. But we can do our very best. Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Our topic for today is considerations for upgraders. So that is people moving to a bigger and or better home. So that's what we're discussing today. So Dave, first question is for you, because you're our property plan expert. Where does upgrading fit into their property plan? When do people need to think about that?
Really, the earlier you can be thinking about your plans for your long-term home, the better. Obviously, you need to have a certain level of stability often in your life to be able to, you know, that might mean you've met your long-term partner, you know where, or you're more confident where you'd like to live for the rest of your life. But the earlier you're planning for your long-term home, the better, because it is, for most people, their largest outlay. And for many people, it's the only property they'll be owning when they retire. For the vast majority, actually, the statistics tell us. So trying to map out the plan for your long-term home, really, the earlier you have a plan for what that looks like, you know, so ideally where you'd like to be living, the suburb, you know, the breakdown of the property type. So with our property plans, we have a document and a process called your future home framework that we get people to complete and fill in. And so that incorporates, like, how many rooms would you like, how many bedrooms, what sort of location are you looking for? What are the top 10? We have a list of 10 things that you'd like to prioritize in the location of your home, such as being near your employment, near public transport, access to outdoors. So there's 10 items, rank them 1 to 10 to really start getting a sense of where would you like to live that's going to tick those boxes. How many living spaces? Do you have a preferred architectural style? You know, what land size would you like? And a whole range of other factors, because one of the killers with the long-term home is people being not able to make a decision, particularly when a market's moving up. So, you know, by really narrowing down, and then we ask them to keep coming back to that while they're on the property search, to keep refining that document, because ultimately you want to be able to narrow down to one or two suburbs, clarity on the house and dwelling, and where you're willing to compromise. So we also have in there, what are you willing to compromise on, and look at some different sort of considerations. You know, is it the price point? Is it the dwelling type? Is it the land size, or is it the location? Where do you feel like you're more willing to compromise? Really, the earlier you start, the better, and the clearer you can be on what that long-term home is going to look like, the more likely you are to develop your property plan so it fits in neatly within it, and you're able to purchase well so that you are able to hold that home through to retirement, which will save you a lot of money and also allow you then to purely focus on your investment strategy.
Now, right. I want to throw a cat among the pigeons here and be the devil's advocate, because it's fun. especially when it's Dave's topic. No, but seriously, there's so much gold in this, and there's a lot of great advice. I meet so many people that aspire to do this, and for whatever reason, they shouldn't. They shouldn't do it at all, or they shouldn't do it now. And Dave, I'm sure you'll be happy to throw some of this around as well, because I catch a lot of people that have the ideal dream home in their mind, and now's not the right time for whatever reason. It could be financial, it could be where they're headed in life is not suited to that particular area yet. They could have indecision around where their kids will go to school. They might not have kids yet. There's so many things that can short circuit this. And for me, an epic fail is if someone puts their all into finding the perfect long-term family home and it's not perfect and they have to sell it. And I'm sure that's your nightmare too, Dave. Getting it right is so important. And it's not just getting the solution right, it's getting the timing right. And I know that sometimes you will endorse a stepping stone and other times you'll endorse rent vesting. I've certainly done that before when I'm looking at their ability to take the capital that they've saved and buy into something that will deliver for them, even if CGT is a consideration down the track. They're better having their money perform at a fantastic rate and then paying 50% of the marginal tax rate at some stage than leaving it in the bank and continuing renting and working out what they want to do with themselves in future years. So at what stage would you say to someone, you're not ready yet?
Look, I think often it really does depend on stage of life. And people, if you make it the analogy, you know, there's a long tunnel and the light can be far away down the tunnel, and that's as good of a vision we can get on the long-term home at this point in time. Have a sort of an idea of what it might be, but really, you know, your next purchase is the stepping stone home or it's an investment property. And obviously that's more likely for a first-time buyer, all the way to, you know, the train's about to hit you in the face because,
yeah,
you know, you're 100% ready for the upgraded home, and really you wish you've been searching for it for the last 2 years, and because you didn't have a clear plan, you know, the market's run away, and this is happening often at the moment. You know, the same property is $300,000 or $400,000 more than if you had have had a clear plan 2 years ago. So all your points are valid, and you know, it is really the, I guess, you know, again, that sort of this your stage of life as to how clear that picture can be. But we'll certainly always have that conversation, because it might frame to some degree the location for that first investment or stepping stone to be in and around where they think they might like to live down the track. But obviously there's no guarantees.
Well said. Look, right. I'm a case in point for someone who had a grand plan and got it wrong. And you're getting it wrong, well, you know, it was forgivable and it's worked out in the wash, but it wasn't ideal. And I could have been in a better position if I'd thought it through really logically. And at the time I thought I had a great plan. We felt that we'd researched this really well, but we worked out where we wanted to be, where we wanted to raise our family, what sort of dwelling we were keen on, amenity, everything, and bought this gorgeous double-story period house, Federation style, in Hobart, in postcode 7000. We could walk down to Constitution Dock. We could walk into the city. It was just the dream, and it was a big four-bedroom house, and of course, here I am in Melbourne.
That wasn't the house that was on the Four Corners episode. The buyer's agent was going through.
No, that wasn't me.
Yeah, and look, good. You know, and it's a great example of how everyone's different. And it's just, you know, it's a conversation that we'll have with every property plan client, and it's a consideration. It's obviously how we started this episode. It isn't that everyone should have that great certainty of all, you know, what I took through that example of then, because it does depend on your stage of life, absolutely.
Yeah, look, I've seen you do it really well with clients, though, Dave, and we were only just talking on Saturday about a really exciting client journey that we've assisted mutual clients with, and what I loved about their strategy, and I always expect to see commonality when someone has determined their purchasing strategy and they're talking to me about executing it. The commonality was actually the dwelling type, but it wasn't necessarily the locations. And so this couple had worked out on their matrix what their priority was, and it was an area that was close to all types of amenity, but the style of the house and the size of the house was really important, and some of the physical attributes. And that landed us in a variety of suburbs. We were looking across Yarraville, Seddon, Kingsville, and then north in Brunswick up to Preston. And so we had this really eclectic array of, you know, inner and middle ring suburbs in Melbourne. And we were looking for a Californian bungalow style property or a double fronted Victorian. They were very attracted to renovated period properties. And I had this array of properties that all met the brief. And then I had to work out how do we get them the right result in a timely manner, because as we all know, the market's moving every week. It's moving. And we had to pick and choose which property to go for that we felt would tick the most boxes and have the highest likelihood of coming in within budget. As it turned out, we nailed it and it was really exciting. And then the others went to auction and went well over budget. And situations like that are joyous when you get it right. You never want to miss at auction and then find out the other, your second preference, which was trailing just behind, fell within budget. That can be devastating. But it is very hard for home buyers. And because they had such a great plan, they had options. And then they could talk to a professional who could do the pricing analysis and give them the right guidance. And dare I say it, if they hadn't engaged with me, would have they gone for that one in Preston? I don't know. They might have been sidetracked. So, yeah, it was just a really well executed and really well put together strategy, more importantly.
Yeah, and if you even talk to those two clients who we did the property plan for, so they're sort of 30-ish young professionals from interstate. And so their property plan, when they came to us, they were unsure, should they be buying, because they plan to live in Cairns, where one of them's from, for a number of years in the early years of having a family. And so they weren't sure, you know, should we be buying our first property in Cairns? Should we get it in Melbourne? Should it be a stepping stone home? Should it be an investment property? And so we went through that full process and they ended up with the stepping stone in Melbourne because that's where they're likely to be long term. Melbourne's more likely to outperform Cairns over the longer term. They could afford to get into a stepping stone home, which would get them closer to a long-term home, and it may even remain a long-term home. But I suspect they'll upgrade at some point, probably in another.
It's pretty big. It's pretty nice. It was interesting because they had two advisors on their side, and you and I weren't taking notes in the lead-up. And one of the things I said about pitching for Preston was, I love this home. It's a future-proofed home. You've got options. You can go up, you can go out. It's the full block. It's bigger. And it was the clear winner. But, yeah, interesting observation because they might add to it and spend and improve it, or who knows. But
100%. And in our property plans, we offer, because look, we talk about the holy grail being only ever owning one home. And that is because, you know, the in and out costs of upgrading is so expensive. And so we'll talk to people about considering, you know, can they get a property that they can grow into? And that Preston property could be such. So actually looking at, okay, well, can I get in the location I want to get into on the block size, but perhaps a smaller dwelling, but one where you've actually seen that type of dwelling has been extended out or up and there is the ability to grow with it and for it to be the long-term home. And maybe that could be the property in Preston. So we'll have to probably wait and see another decade before.
Yeah.
So, Dave, next question to you. Why are money goals and the money management system so important for upgraders?
Well, look, usually when we buy a home, we're making our largest financial stretch. So whether that's a first-time buyer or upgrader, as an upgrader, it's usually the largest outlay we'll make in life. So understanding our cash flow position today and then what we'd like it to be after we purchase, and also the level of buffer we'd like to have, so available funds, access to redraw, is really critical because we're more likely to be stretching ourselves to the largest level of debt we're going to have in our lives. And we do talk about when you're purchasing a home, putting an emotional premium on it, understanding where market value lies, but then consider whether you're willing to go above that, because it's much harder to find a property that you're happy to live in for the rest of your life for most people. So they're a bit more of a needle in a haystack. That financial stretch needs to be considered in advance, but within your money, financial comfort zone and risk profile.
Excellent. So I've got a series of questions for you based around should you buy first, so buy your upgraded home and then sell. Should you sell your existing home and buy your upgraded home? So let's start with what are the advantages of buying first?
Pete, that's a great question and it comes up often and I'm really excited that we're able to share this today because it's such a common question. I've actually written blogs about it. So the advantages of buying first and selling first, there's no doubt about it. There are advantages in different markets to either. But if you're trying to time a market, you've also got to look at the risk of doing so because if you get it wrong, there's a price to pay as well. So when someone is upgrading, they'll either be buying first and then making sure they can sell in time for settlement, unless they have bridging finance or funds on hand, which not everyone does. So we have to think really carefully about this. If you are buying first and selling second, you'd probably only opt to do that in a moving market or if what you're looking for is super, super rare and you need to nail it first before you're prepared to sell your property. Now, if you are in a moving market, you can probably assume that you'll have a really strong buyer pool for your property when it comes on the market, unless it's a quirky, weird property. So that's another consideration. If you can be assured of having a popular property with a really good lineup of buyers, then you can probably take that commercial risk a little more readily, knowing that you purchase your property, you'll get a reasonable settlement, and then you've got X number of days to get yours sold and settled. Give yourself enough time. If you're only giving yourself 60 days, it's not enough time, in my opinion, because you've got to appoint an agent, get your property dressed and ready for sale, sell it, and then settle it. And your settlement date has to be either on the same day and ideally through the same legal rep so that they can handle a consecutive settlement, or you might have to find out a way to sell and settle first and then your purchase settlement comes through within days after that. And it means you could be couch surfing or staying in a hotel or whatever it could be, license agreement to continue renting for a short amount of time. These are some of the things we try and think about when we're helping people with that transition. Now, if it's a buyer's market and things aren't going so well, you might be really keen to sell first and then buy second because you want to get today's dollar value for your home. And if the market's falling, then you can buy yourself a bargain down the track. But if you are trying to time the market and that doesn't come to fruition, you could find that your trading conditions are quite different. And if the market increases, well, then the value of your currency will be in decline. So it's a really tough one. And my best advice is if you can manage it together, that will smooth out the risk. Try and have a purchase and a sale happening at the same time and give yourself really long settlement periods on the purchase and the sale so that you can bring them together with a little bit of flex.
Yeah, some and excellent tips there,
Kate. The best ways you can do that if you're trying to do it at the same time is obviously the buying part. There's no guarantees. So actually having gone through the process of selecting your agent and getting your house ready to sell so you can pull the trigger on that as soon as you're ready. So if you do make the decision to buy first, so you literally can pull the trigger on it within that week following agreeing to purchase. And then if you've been able to negotiate a long settlement period, ideally with the option to be able to bring it forward, should you sell yours rapidly, then that is a way to minimize some of the risk of buying first. But certainly buying first, unless you're in the ideal position where your financial position is so strong, both from an income and borrowing capacity perspective, you don't even need to sell. You could actually hold the other property, but you're choosing to sell just to, you know, reduce your debt significantly on the future home, then having every box ticked so the property that you currently own is ready to sell is just another tip there to make that transition as smooth as possible.
Dave, I want to pick up on what on your last point there, and that is, so I was speaking to a young couple a couple of weeks ago, and they were asking me, they wanted to upgrade. So should we sell our existing home, buy the dream home, sell it later? And I said, because they could afford to, why don't you buy the dream home, keep the other home? In this hot market, you'll have both properties going up in value significantly, and then when the time is right, you can sell the other home. And, you know, you're laughing because you're living in your dream home. You've had the opportunity to have two properties growing in value. So you'd be much better off having two properties growing in value rather than selling one and buying the other?
Look, that really comes back to the planning at the start of buying your stepping stone home or your existing property. It's all about your mortgage strategy to optimize your ability to be able to hold that first property when you do upgrade. And so I've written an article on this for Domain previously, but in essence, what you want to do is make either interest-only repayments or the minimum principal and interest repayment on that first property. So you're putting every extra dollar of savings into your offset account. And so that has two benefits. One is you're preserving the, you know, counterintuitively, you're preserving the debt levels on that original property, which will optimize your tax deductions and then maintain a stronger financial case for keeping that property when you do upgrade. And then the double whammy benefit or double benefit is that you'll have more money in your offset that then can go towards the future home. So you have less debt, which is non-deductible on the future home. Yeah, and that's why, you know, a great example of how your mortgage strategy underpins your property plan, you know, because getting that right every day counts from the moment you actually settled on the previous property or properties that you've already purchased. And often, you know, we meet with people who didn't have their mortgage strategy right, so it's much harder for them to keep the existing property. And also, this is obviously something we talk about in terms of the broader property plan when we're meeting with someone, you know, wherever they may be down the track, even if the long-term home is a distant light at the end of the tunnel.
So would it be true to say, Dave, that it's horses for courses? Different people will have different strategies because of their different circumstances.
100%. You know, if you live in a regional town, it's more likely you'll be able to achieve only buying one home, which is awesome. Whereas if you live in the inner suburbs or hope to live in the inner suburbs of a capital city, it's more likely you're going to have to purchase a stepping stone home because of the different affordability factors at play.
Excellent. So, Kate, I'll start the next question with you because you're our person on the ground every day out there in the market.
Yeah.
And we're going through a really hot time now in our market, property market cycle. When do you reckon is the best time to upgrade?
When you need to. When you try and time things, it can end in tears. And I'll give you lots of examples. Whatever selling conditions you're facing, if you're buying and selling at the same time, then you're trading in the same market. And you might pay a premium, but you could get a premium for your own property. If you're able to hold your property and you can time it, the only timing that I will forgive is seasonality. And that doesn't relate to buying a bargain. It relates to having more choice, and it relates to having potentially less buyers per property. So maybe your competition levels could be reduced a little bit. So for example, if you're looking at shopping in late spring, we've got an abundance of property on the market right now compared to other times of the year. And that's the same every year unless we've got COVID lockdowns. So you've got to think about when you'll have an abundance of stock and when you're more likely to find what you want. And if you're shopping in the middle of winter and then one amazing property comes up, you can be very, very assured of lots of buyers at that auction, and it will be really tough and really competitive. If I was a vendor and selling something with lots of generic appeal, I would think about selling in July or August because there's not many other properties competing with it and buyers are still active. So thinking about seasonality and identifying how rare the property is that you're after is really important, because if it's so rare it only comes up once or twice a year, then you've got to work out how you can be prepped and ready when that property comes up, because you're getting one shot at it. And if you miss it, you might have to wait another 6 or 12 months for it. So it's all about having a game plan. But when you're ready to start shopping, that's when you should think about getting your finance sorted, have your strategy with your mortgage in place, and get started now. I've watched too many people this time last year waiting for JobKeeper to end, thinking that's when we'll get serious about our strategy. And many of them have been priced out of the suburb they could have bought in.
Yeah. It's certainly been a very strange market with COVID-19. Many people at the beginning thought it would drop significantly and stay low for a long time, so it was a bargain buying opportunity, but almost exactly the opposite has happened. Dave, what about you? When do you reckon is the best time to upgrade?
You know, I concur with pretty much everything that Kate just said. History tells us there's no time like the present. Generally speaking, the market is rising much more often than it's retracting. We had our largest retraction on record 3 or 4 years ago, and that was only around 10% in Melbourne and Sydney. You run a big risk. I think I've shared on the podcast before a story of some clients who were looking in a location around here actually a number of years ago, and they missed out on a property for about $800,000, and they were in the early stages of searching for their upgraded home. They ended up buying that same property 3 years later for about $1.6 million. So, you know, that's the type of story that can happen when you delay the upgrading. And, you know, for every the occasional one story where I hear, you know, they actually managed to time the market right, you know, and the market was going backwards and they were better off, there's 99 stories of how taking too long to make the decision and get clear on the plan for the upgrade has cost money.
Right. Very good. We've only got a few more minutes to go. Is there anything else that you wanted to say, Kate, or Dave, you wanted to say about considerations for upgraders?
Yeah, I do. I've got a valuable little tip if it can be facilitated. And I recently helped with I'll call it a right size as opposed to an upgrade. My mum and dad actually sold the family home and moved into their retiree pad. And of course, navigating something like that with your parents, it's a different experience because you do this every day for clients, but your parents tell you what they really think and they let you know when they're really stressed. And it was a great assignment because it went really smoothly. But part of what went really smoothly for them, and my parents are in their 70s, so I didn't want this to be any more stressful for them than it needed to be. I was able to facilitate a period of time before their settlement on the purchase for them to have access to the property under what we call a license agreement. Sometimes license agreements are an arrangement where you show that you've insured the dwelling and you're happy to pay market rent and you can move in early before your settlement and basically take possession or at least occupy the property. And for mum and dad, I was able to facilitate a full month and it was rent-free. That was part of the negotiated terms because the vendors had already vacated. So it was sitting there vacant. And so mum and dad's settlement went through yesterday, but they've already sorted out all their boxes and unpacked everything and moved in to their property in town, which was really exciting, but it was also really easy for them. It made a difficult task a little bit more of a breeze, dare I say.
Well, it certainly helps when they have a daughter like Kate Bakos, doesn't it?
You tell them that, Pete.
Dave, any last words before we get to your gold nuggets?
Yeah, I guess just on the flip side, the same kind of example, but on the other side, when you sell before you've purchased, you can organise the same thing with the incoming purchaser potentially to continue renting the property for a period of time at market rates until you have purchased and are ready to settle on your upgraded home. So that's not going to be able to be done every time, but if you are able to negotiate that, that can just smooth out that transition to the upgraded home.
Really good point. I see this often when people are building, whether it's house and land or whether they've done a huge construction effort or a redevelopment or extension or whatever on the new purchase.
Very good. Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you, Kate. And another excellent episode on upgraders this time around. So please don't go away, listeners, because we've got the gold nuggets from Kate and Dave coming up.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget, it relates to what Dave does, so I've probably just stolen his gold nugget. It's actually for people who are contemplating an upgrade and think that it's easy to get bridging finance, think again. Don't ever make the assumption that you can sort it out without having a really good chat with your strategic mortgage broker because it's difficult, it's far more limited these days, it's very expensive and it can be very, very stressful if you haven't had that chat and your time frame is too short.
Thank you for that, Kate. Dave, your gold nugget.
Great gold nugget, Kate. You've stolen mine. So
that's you'd say that.
Yeah, look, I'll just build on that actually. Get your finances clear, know your numbers, because You can do all the pontificating in the world that you like, but if you don't know your numbers, you might be looking at properties that just are outside of your budget, or you know, you won't be clear on you've got to sell first or whatever it is you need to do. Then I just add, whenever you are ready to upgrade, take the time to sit down, you know, if you're buying by yourself or with your spouse, and really have a framework to what it is you're looking for. Why are you willing to live in these locations? What sort of dwelling? What sort of land? You're each going to have different preferences. What are you willing to compromise on? You know, I think often there's just not enough conversation around this, and that's why people bounce around a lot and take so long to actually purchase. So, you know, the more conversation you have and actually have a framework, the more you can cross things out, change things, and get clear on what it is you want, but also what the market will allow you to buy based on your budget.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Dave. Thank you also for that, Kate. And thank you, listeners, for taking the time to listen into this episode. And we look forward to having you back next week.
Next week.
See you next week.
Bye for now.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about planning for a lifestyle purchase, take a listen to episode number 5, The Lifestyle versus Investment Conundrum. Episode number 13, How Age and Stage of Life Can Impact Your Property Plan and Selection. Episode 22, Why the Family Home is Often the Biggest Piece of the Investment Puzzle. Episode 36, Buying the Wrong Property and or the Wrong Location. Number 6 of the top 7 critical mistakes. Episode 81, Holiday Houses, Delirium or Dream? And episode 82, Goal Setting Fundamentals for Property Success.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super products.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.